Hey everyone, welcome to the Gear Priority Podcast. I'm your host, Justin, and I'm joined today by Jesse with Backcountry Forward, and then Carl from Backpacking and Blisters. Woo-hoo. We're on a backpacking trip together in the beautiful Canadian Rockies here. We just beat our butts to climb up to this pass here, and we got to beat our butts ahead. And yeah, we got to go to the next pass too. So how are you guys doing on the trip so far? Day three.
Good. It sounds like you guys got to get in better shape if you're beating your butts against this pass.
I need to do more squats.
Meanwhile, he's carrying the heaviest backpack. Yeah, no, I'm loving it. It's good to be here again. This is the second time up this route. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So today we have some hot takes for you guys. We're going to be talking about hot takes with gear, something that's a little bit controversial maybe, or that's a little bit nuanced and specific to how we like to backpack. I think I'm going to kick it off with the pack. We kind of alluded to it. I'm carrying I started off with a 55-pound pack. It's probably down to 50 pounds now after eating a bunch of food.
Well, you've had 5 pounds of food?
I probably have eaten 5 pounds of food.
This guy's crazy.
My hot take is that a heavy pack isn't the worst.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I'm usually an ultralighter, and it hasn't been killing me as bad as I thought it was going to. I think this pack is a little bit, it carries the weight really well.
Fair, but you've also been in a lot of pain.
I've also been in a lot of pain. Yeah, my glutes are feeling it. My calves are feeling it. There's a lot of elevation gain, especially today, so... That's my hot take. Like, I'm usually an ultralighter, but maybe I need to be adding some weight to my pack a little bit more often.
Man, you got to clarify this. It's not the worst for who? For somebody who's really fit, for somebody who's going on a shorter trip, it's not the worst for who specifically.
Good point. I think if it's the right trip, then having a heavy pack is okay. Like, we dealt with a lot of rain, and I have a 2-person tent. I have a tarp in there. I have a lot of warm clothing. Like, we got down to almost freezing overnight. So having that extra weight made camp a lot more comfortable.
And do you have a high pain tolerance? Like, some people, if they hit that pain, the trip's not fun after that point, right? So going ultralight is better for them. But if you got a high pain tolerance, then, like, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, I have a pretty high.
Yeah, I would suspect.
That's why it's a hot take.
Yeah, there you go. Fair enough.
All right, Kai, I feel like you have a hot take at the tip of your tongue.
No, I'm still reacting to your hot take. I think that you can handle it because you actually, as poking fun at you, but you actually are in really good shape. And you're also younger than me, and so I don't think I could handle a 50-pound pack as easily as you did. Like, you're moving at a pretty good clip up and down the hills, and so, yeah, I think
How old are you?
46 years old.
My hot take is that that's old.
Jesse's a spring chicken.
Right? But I was about to say, I'm younger than you, and I think you're handling it better than I could, so.
And again, it depends on what you bring. So you mentioned some luxury items that actually were pretty handy to have on the trip. But I think you can, I don't know, you're also bringing a lot of, you know, like this podcast gear, for example. And so I think you can maybe shore it down a little bit.
Yeah, he's going to the extreme.
I'm saying, like, maybe 50 pounds is a lot, but, like, maybe 35, 40 pounds isn't as bad as maybe I thought before, whereas I'd be trying to get down to, like, 20, 25 pounds for a 4-day trip.
I think that's fair if it's, like, a lower mileage trip, not as much elevation gain for your average backpacker. Your elite, like, just an outdoors backpacker. I think it can handle a lot better. So anyway, yeah. So, okay, you want to get my hot take? All right, I'm going to start. So let's see. I'm going to start with a basic one. All right, so this is a Honey Stinger Oat and Honey Bar. I'm actually a really big fan of Honey Stinger. I like their gels. I like their chews. But I think they're new to the bars, and I tried them out on a long trail run / hike. Towards the end, I don't know. I think I want to say it was like 14, 15 miles in. And this, I think, is the worst energy bar I've ever had. So, have you guys had this?
No.
Okay.
So?
Don't.
So are Honey Stingers, like, very, like, wait, are they very popular? Is this going to be controversial?
Yeah. Honey Stinger makes really good stuff.
I like Honey Stingers.
Yeah, they're popular. They make a lot of good stuff. They're really good, like, quick energy, quick fuel. When you got a 50-pound pack, you're climbing up a pass, especially. And so, anyway, so this is like truly an oat bar where it feels like you're putting, like, a whole bunch of flour in your mouth that just dries it out. I was guzzling water, and I could not get my mouth, like, out of that dry mouth feel. And so not only would I never buy one of these again, I would not recommend these to anybody. I would recommend Honey Stinger to take them off of their line altogether and rethink their energy bars, because this is embarrassing.
Honey Stinger, if you're listening, your hot take?
Yeah.
All right, Jesse, go.
Okay, I am currently sitting on a chair. I don't even know who makes this chair. What was the brand?
This was... Oh, it's a Grand Trunk,
Grand
I
Trunk.
Think.
Grand Trunk. Okay, anyways, I'm borrowing it, and it has 2 legs. And every backpacking chair should have 4 legs. I mean, you could get away with 3, maybe 3, but preferably 4.
I believe that's called a stool.
Yeah, fair enough. Backpacking stools versus back. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I actually have these in case it, like, wobbles off. My leg's slow behind us. Jesse was talking about maybe tumbling to his death. I wouldn't want to have to reclimb.
I just don't get, like, I don't honestly get the point. Like, I don't see, like, the weight savings aren't worth it. Like, for those two little...
There's no weight savings.
Yeah, this one, with this one, there isn't even any. So it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chairs we're sitting on, the Helox Chair Zero that you got over there, and then...
These are the same.
I'm on the Nemo Moonlight Elite prototype chair right here. They're same weight or less.
I don't even bring chairs on my trips, but I wouldn't bring this.
Yeah.
I'd sooner just bring
that might be a hot take, like not bringing a chair on a trip. Like, what's up with that?
All I need is a butt pad, sit pad. That's all I need.
I'm confused with the hot take on this one. So you feel like there's a pretty big community out there that feels like two-legged chairs are legit.
I'm confused by both your hot takes. I'm like, I haven't heard.
People love Honeysinger stuff. This is terrible. Do people love two-legged chairs?
I feel like manufacturers love them. I feel like they're like, you know what we should do? We should make a two-legged chair. And I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, when innovation starts going backwards, it's like, okay, we start off with this two-legged chair, then we went to four legs. You know what? We're out of ideas. Let's go back to two.
Yeah, and full disclosure, like with that, I was at the outdoor retailer show where the guy was like, just try it. And I was like, I'm unwilling to try it because it's not a real chair.
Yeah, it's not. Like, literally, talk about reinventing the wheel and making something that's not a wheel.
Yeah, like a square.
Yeah, square. Yeah, it's like, yeah. This is not a chair. This is two pegs that I'm balancing on.
It's a square wheel right there.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, maybe it's not controversial enough. We'll get there.
Well, I got a controversial one for you. This one, you guys, if you're in the comments, if you're watching this on YouTube and you're commenting, you'll probably get a little bit triggered by this one. And that's merino wool. I've been talking about merino wool for a while, and I think big merino, like, I don't know if it's the Australian and New Zealand governments,
big merino, the conspiracy
advertising that merino wool is the best thing out there to wear no matter what you're doing at any point in time, and I disagree. And there's a couple of reasons. The first one is that it holds on to a ton of moisture. It holds on to 10 times as much moisture as nylon. So it's not going to dry as quickly. It's going to keep you wetter. And the second thing is it's touted as being something that keeps you warm when wet. And I disagree. I'd say it keeps you warm when damp. Once it's saturated and you have moisture on the outside of the fibers, you are going to be having evapotranspiration that's going to be cooling you off just as much as anything else.
What does evapotranspiration mean?
So that's when, like, the wind right now that's hitting us, if that hits water, when it, like, takes that water away, it's taking heat that's in the water and energy out of your body, yeah.
But doesn't wool have a higher ratio of, like, it's able to absorb more of that moisture and keep you warm longer than any synthetic? Because, like, this, I'm wearing synthetic right now. This gets damp. I'm wet because it's saturated. But I could get wetter in a merino wool top and still... not hit that limit yet.
Yeah, and that's the benefit of merino wool is, like, the water goes to the interior of the fiber and then stays there, so you don't have the evapotranspiration happening because the water's on the inside of the fiber. But once the merino wool gets saturated, so it's good for, like, sweating. If you're sweating a lot, it's going to be beneficial in that sense for keeping you warm. But if you're in rain or, like, your socks, like, I see that as, like, for socks, I think merino wool is a bad choice because... If your feet are getting wet a lot, like if you're going through stream crossings, then they're not going to dry as quickly.
I haven't tried synthetic socks. I'm actually curious to try. I use a synthetic liner with a wool sock, so I'm curious to try that. But see, I'm a sweater, so for me, merino wool makes so much sense for a top. But I mean, I'm trying the whole synthetic thing. I got that trying, but
what's good?
You like it for toques?
I like it for sleep toques because I like it for sleeping because I just sweat lightly, and then it manages my body temperature a lot better and it's comfortable. So I like merino wool as a sleep thing, but not so much as an active wear.
Okay.
I don't have a strong opinion about this. Yeah.
What do you wear?
I mean, I've been going back and forth. I've got synthetic socks on now. We've been going through a lot of stream crossings on this trip, and had I had the wool socks on, I don't know. Like, I think both, like, sop and wet feet most of the time. So I don't know. It would have mattered either way. I will say, though, that the wool does absorb, as you're mentioning, it absorbs more water. So in the end, if you're going to have, like, a sopping wet synthetic versus a sopping wet merino wool sock, it's going to be heavier. The merino wool is going to be heavier. So you're actually, like, literally carrying around more weight.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's my hot take. I feel like that was the hottest one. You got some hotter ones?
Oh, I got a hotter one.
Right now? Go for it, Carl.
All right, so before I share, if you want to reach out to Backpacking and Blisters and not post any negative comments or suggestions to this channel, I'm sure he would appreciate that.
That's Carl's podcast. I'll have links in the show notes, so definitely go check it out.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. The bear spray. We are in grizzly bear country right now. There could be a grizzly bear literally coming up behind us right now. And so this is like, you know, who's going to bring it? Who's going to have some? How many canisters do we need for our group? We've got a group of eight. Groups of four or more, there's never been a grizzly bear attack.
Been an attack, never been a serious injury.
Okay. Okay, you know your stats better than I do. I'm gonna defer to you on that. You live in Canada. Either way, typically when attacks happen is when you're surprising the grizzly bear. And with our group, we are so stinking loud. Like, Jesse by himself is loud. We're so loud. We're not sneaking up on anybody. All right? We haven't even, like, we've seen, like, one animal, I think, the whole time.
We had some goats that were up here.
And those were distant.
Miles away. They're miles away when they started running away. And we had to move this podcast, like, a mile away from the rest of the group, because otherwise they'd be, they're so loud.
As a result, I think that if you're in a big enough group, I don't think you actually need to carry the bear spray. I think that you can get away with not carrying it, especially a loud group such as ours. And I know that's not common for backpacking, but before the trip happened, I told both these guys, I said, I guarantee you we are not going to see a bear. Guarantee we're
what
not going to see
say?
One. I forget.
I said I didn't think we were going to see a bear either, but I think you should bring bear spray.
But we got bear spray, we got bear canisters, we got the, you know...
I think it's like pooping, or like if you're taking your ursac away.
Oh,
that like when you're isolated, or like if the group splits up potentially.
Give this to the pooper. That's fine.
Like, I don't think everyone in the group needs bear spray, but having like two or three for a group of eight is probably good practice.
If I'm getting charged, like even like the chance of getting charged, even a group of eight, I would rather have bear spray in that group of eight than not have bear spray in that group of eight.
I think that's a safe way to go. I'm just saying that, like, we've hiked in grizzly country a number of times, and we've literally been, like, hiking across steaming pile of bear poop every 10 yards, and, like, there's a bear around here, but we're not encountering it because we're so stinking loud. And so I think that if you want to play it safe, I'd go with one and give this to the pooper or whoever's kind of peeling off and doing whatever. But I think that that's an easy way to shave weight if you're in a large group. That's my hot take. Let me have it.
What's the lowest group? Like, what's the minimum of then you don't need bear spray? Four?
Like, I say four.
If you're four or more, you don't need.
That's what I'd say.
Nope.
Yeah.
I think I get what you're saying. And I think I agree from a situational and risk assessment standpoint. So I think if people are out there and they're confident in their knowledge of grizzly bear habitat, grizzly bear behavior, and their risk assessment, then go for it. If you're not, if you're out there and you're like, I'm going to grizzly bear country as a group of eight, and you've never been to grizzly bear country before, then bring the bear spray.
No, I mean, I'm...
But I think that's part of the thing with hot... A lot of hot takes are how, like, where your risk tolerance is and your comfortability with experience in certain scenarios.
But even with experience, like, I mean, you're experienced with bears outdoors more than most. And yet, you were solo, fair enough. But, like, it takes one encounter with a grizzly bear where you don't know where their kill site is. That you could be coming over the edge. Their kill site is just 500 meters away, or not even, sorry, 5 meters away. And you can't see it. It's in the bush, but they're aggressive. You could be a group of eight. That bear is going to act aggressive. I'd like to have bears. I mean, that's a hot take.
There's a bunch of scenarios that where this could happen for sure. And so you could say, well, you got to always bring a gun because there's a creeper out on the trail. And you never know when that creeper is going to sneak up on you, right? I mean, we had some creepy people near our camp last night that we were afraid of. So you just never know. Like, you can protect, you can wear body armor because you never know when the eagle's going to swoop down and, like, bite your shoulder. Like, there's, you know, so you got, again, risk assessment, I think, is wise. But we're on day three of four, and we haven't seen a bear, folks.
Probably won't.
And the time I got charged is the only time I've ever seen a grizzly bear while on trail, and I've covered a lot of trail in this area, yeah. It's the only time, so.
All right. There you go.
Hot take?
My hot take is that Jetboil is mediocre gear at best, highly marketed. That is my hot take. It's just,
I'm gonna double down on that and say Jetboil is terrible gear at best.
There you go. Yeah, like well, no, I mean, I think it's mediocre. Like, it does the minimum of what it says. It's not like it's garbage, but it's overhyped, overmarketed to do something that's far cheaper, far lighter, far less can do just as well.
Yeah. So what if it was $50?
If it was $50, yeah, sure. You know, like, I don't think it's a bad thing.
What do you give it as a rating out of 10 for a stove? Like, you're taking everything into account,
weight and everything, and quality. I mean, we've been talking even on this trip how it seems like a lot of the gear, back Jetboil gear around us is breaking. So not on this trip, but like with people we know, different gear, pieces of gear. So yeah, like I'd probably rate it compared to the best on the market. It's probably like a solid 6.
That's pretty good.
5, 6. Yeah, but at the price range, it's not.
That's like taking it to price. Like I give it like a 3.
Yeah, that agreed. Because I can get something off of Amazon that's probably just as good for like a third of the price, if not like a quarter of the price.
Yeah, I think, I don't know.
You're the Jetboil user here.
I am, and my wife really likes the Jetboil, and so we have like brand loyalty, so full disclosure. But I think like, if I'm looking at this objectively, I think with the price, you guys are correct. And recently I had like a third problem with my first Jetboil flash, I think it was, where it was like the wire, I don't know, what do you call that thing where it turns on the fuel?
The peso? Oh no, the
spinny thing.
The valve.
The valve thing, yeah, like that broke off, and so we were kind of like in a bind on a trip, and you know, like when you have your MSR stoves, I've never had like little parts and pieces break off. And that was a third thing that went wrong. So taking into account the quality, especially, like I'd probably go like a 1 or a 2 at this
point.
Yeah.
Okay. But even like the premise, the idea that it boils water faster, which saves you fuel. I know I've gotten into this with you before. I don't actually think that premise is as valuable as they market it to be. I don't think it actually saves you the weight that they make it seem like you do. The exception being maybe in a large group like yours, where you're doing like a massive group, tons of liters boiled, maybe you can save a fraction of that fuel, but I still don't think it adds up to the weight of the system itself.
The math that I've seen is for a couple, it's the tipping point is 10 days to go.
For two people?
For two people to go to boil water for two people for like breakfast and dinner, and then compared to a Tokes pot and a BRS stove.
There you go, that's interesting.
Wind is going to affect that. That's in non-windy conditions. The Jetboil is probably going to work a little bit better in wind, but I think that's potentially a little bit overhyped as well, because you still have exposure of the element on the bottom there.
But even if it's 7 days, like that's just where you're breaking even, and the amount where you push past and get weight savings is literally grams per day past that. So it's just like, it's not worth it.
So if you flip that though, then if you're in a group of 10, it's 2 days, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm in groups of 10 frequently or more.
But then you're like, if you're only boiling a liter of water at a time, like the time savings goes out the window. So all you're dealing with then is a little bit of weight savings and fuel savings.
There's a lot of factors. Because if you have like 10 people, you're typically going to be bringing multiple stoves, but you can get away with one Jetboil stove. So now you're talking about less collective weight if you're going to be sharing the gear. And because it boils water so fast, like you can get away with one stove for 10 people because you can just boop, 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 and you're good to go. I know you guys don't go with 10 people a lot. I know that not everybody does that, so I get it.
It's like I said, that is the only place where there's at least a slightly legitimate argument, but it's such a rare occurrence. And even then, I think the weight savings are so minuscule. It's just overmarketed.
I think it always comes down to cost for me. Like I don't think that. Like I can see the benefits.
Sure, get a fire mate.
But I think the cost is just too much relative to like what you can get for like $40. That's going to weigh a lot less, and you're not going to have to be doing that kind of like math.
Well, get a smaller brand like Fire Maple. That's like less than half the price and the same benefits that you're talking about. Anyways.
And if you want a backpack with 10 people more, get more friends.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I don't. I'm pretty sure I just made. I just like tripled my friend group if I have them on this trip. And I'm assuming they're my friends, right? Like I backpack with someone and they're my friend.
You guys will backpack with us again, right?
They give you like a 5 out of 10.
Oh.
They're shaking their heads on the ridge up there.
I think you're a 5. I think Jesse's more of like a 1 or 2.
No, that's not it. Ow.
Oh, sorry. I can't push you over then.
Tumbles down the cliff. You're like a 1. Poof. There he goes.
And throw us your big hot take, Jesse.
That was my hot take. Yeah, no, Carl.
I'm tapped out. It is your turn. I had to. You get to.
You got a bug on you. All right.
Do you have any more?
I do.
Okay. And
it's kind of a positive hot take, I guess. It's I think trekking pole tents are just better and easier than tents with a traditional pole structure. Like I really like the fact that. I can set them up quicker than a regular pole tent now, with like
practice, yeah.
And a lot of people, they're going into using trekking pole tents with years of practice with regular pole tents, so it's a little bit of a biased situation there. And then I also like that most trekking pole tents, the whole tent goes up all in one, and that's been useful on this trip with the 2 days of rain that we had, setting up the X-Mid just all in one, nothing on the inside gets wet. It was phenomenal versus having to try and get a fly over top of the tent really quickly
while it's raining and everything getting wet inside.
I feel like I agree with you when it comes to the X-Mid. I feel like I haven't tried any other trekking pole tents. I remember, though, one of the reason I got the X-Mid was because I was daunted at the learning curve of having to learn and practice a whole new tent setup. And it seems more finicky. The guy lines, the balancing of the trekking pole with more pyramid designs. Now I don't think I'd have a problem with it. But definitely, like, at a beginner level, I think it's a little intimidating.
Yeah, I can see that. I think a regular pole tent, like, if you gave that to someone who's never set up a pole tent before, they'd go, like, where does this piece go? Like, do I set up, like, the poles this way or that way? And then, like, what are these little clippy things? And
But car camping gives you some sort of background. And so I think most people have some experience with car camping who start backpacking. And so there's similar structures. So it's like, okay, I can kind of figure this out.
And the good tent brands, like, have the color coding lining up with the grommets and this and that. And a lot of them just have, like the poles are all in one. Like, you just kind of snap them all together into one piece.
Yeah, I don't think I disagree with you. I think I'd push back just gently on, like, for beginners.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe overblown how much easier it is compared to trekking pole tents. Where I think if I was out there and I was getting into backpacking, I wouldn't let the fact that a tent is a trekking pole tent dissuade me from maybe looking at that tent. And I think we're seeing that with the X-Mid. Like, I've been on trips to some very popular campsites recently, and whereas before it'd be like all Hubba Hubbas and Big Agnes Copper Spurs, it's now there's some X-Mid, some Z-Pax tents thrown in there. It's coming up, which is interesting to see.
I would agree with you so long as you are a trekking pole user. I'm actually not a trekking pole user.
That's a hot take.
Yeah.
You said you're on hot takes. That's a hot take, right?
To not use trekking poles.
Why not?
I think it's actually smart to use trekking poles. It's just personal preference. I just like having my hands free.
To do what?
To, like, grab snacks, to fiddle with my pack. I just like having my hands free. I don't know.
Have you checked out the stick stashers? So there's these magnets on the side of my pack here, and then you put them on your trekking pole, and you can stash your trekking poles to do things with your hands.
That's next level right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a hot take to not use trekking poles. I think it's actually, like, you know, way more efficient. It's going to save your joints. I think it's wise to use.
So it is a hot take to not use trekking poles.
So I just personal preference.
You just don't really agree with it too much. Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know if I'd go and buy, like, one of those extra carbon fiber poles specifically to use a trekking pole tent instead. So, yeah.
You still save a lot of weight. Like, the Durston Z-Flick poles are they're like 60 grams, few ounces. And they work very well. I have those on this trip, in addition to my trekking poles, because I'm carrying a lot of weight. And yeah, they work well. So, like, even if you don't use trekking poles, I still wouldn't say be dissuaded from trekking pole tents. But
I still own one. I got one. I just, yeah, yeah.
You mentioned in your podcast recently that one of the reasons why trekking poles are maybe a little bit overrated is that you burn more calories using trekking poles.
I didn't
than
say
not
okay,
using
trekking
now poles.
You're
saying that trekking
what
poles
I'm saying. Come on.
Ruin the world.
Here's what I said. Okay, so we had an episode recently. It was like 10 lies the gear companies tell you. And I said that trekking poles make your hike easier. So it depends on how you define easier. Because if you're talking about, like, saving your joints, if it talks about saving your leg muscles, they do make your life easier. But if you're talking about overall just, like, energy output, specifically calorie burning, I think, I don't know, I have my notes for me for that podcast. Wasn't it like 40%, you burn 40% more because you're using smaller muscles to do the job that bigger muscles are doing. And so some people like that. They're like, well, then I get to eat more food and I can, you know, I can burn more calories. I can, like, enjoy the food more. And that's great. But to say that it's overall, it's easier, you're still, your energy output is more with trekking poles. That's not a hot take. That's just science, my friend.
Yeah, I still need to double check that. But
I have heard that similar. I haven't double checked it, but I have heard similar that, like, using your arms in that kind of fashion does increase the overall calorie, which will increase the amount of weight you carry for food. So it's an interesting hot take.
But just think about it. You're using small muscles for what big muscles are doing. I mean, it's not...
Not 100%. Like, you're only taking off a fraction of the energy. So you're just taking a portion, and those muscles are otherwise unused.
Right, but you're right, you are using muscles that are unused. You're right. So there's some efficiency there, for sure. But overall, you're burning more calories. It was some medical journal that I was looking at, and I don't have the source now because...
It depends on what you're prioritizing. If, like, calories is what you're prioritizing, then maybe don't use trekking poles. If saving your joints,
which is highly more valuable for sure than the calorie output, so that's why I would still recommend using them. Just, again, personal preference. You're trying to like trap me into a hot take, and I'm not falling for it, my friend.
Already,
I trapped you. You got trapped.
So should I do a positive one or a negative one?
Let's keep it positive. Let's do another positive one. Yeah.
Okay. I was gonna say ursacs should be allowed in all national parks in the United States.
Based on what?
Based on my own personal feelings. It's a hot take.
Based on your personal based on the testing that you've been doing with grizzly bears?
Based on the testing that I've done in Canada, far away from every national park in America.
Oh my gosh. I would love that. I would love that. But and for me, like having experience in so many different environments, especially in the United States, like for me that would be great. So personally I would love that, but I just know that would not be great overall. And I know that there's a lot of foolish behavior specifically this year in Nevada mountains, which have caused some very aggressive bears. And yeah, I could see that being a disaster. I would love that.
Barring foolish Americans, ursacs should be allowed in every national park in America. I'm just joking.
It's being eliminated.
I think it's the tourists that more than the Americans. I think it is.
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
That's
and not Canadians. I'm not talking about Canadians.
Yeah, no, that's true. There's a lot of foolish there. I think, yeah, and maybe I should soften the hot take. Maybe the majority of parks. I think it's fair to say that there's like specific hotbeds of activity that you got to do something a little bit different. And it's not great in some locations. Like it's really ursacs aren't the best for up in high alpine. It's better to be able to bury a bear canister. But overall, I think they should be an option that you can consider.
Okay.
And I think if it's an area where the bears are such an issue and the area is so popular that an ursac isn't useful, then I think the land management agencies should be putting up bear hangs or lockers.
Yeah, I agree.
Like if it's that busy that the bears are that habituated to like opening up an ursac,
yeah,
then that's a bigger problem.
No, specifically the bear wires. That's what I put up.
Yeah, no, I agree, and that's what we do here in Canada. And so we've you know, we're better than America is what I'm saying.
Like we're ursacking this trip and we have some bear canisters, but that's because we're in an area that's a lot more remote. Whereas if you go to the more popular areas in the Canadian Rockies, there's bear lockers at every campsite or bear hangs. And then you get to the more remote kind of off trail areas like we're at right now. And as you can see, this pretty amazing spot. You just bring the ursac and the bears probably have no idea what it is and we'll just ignore it.
Yeah.
And this is not green screen.
No.
Okay.
Not green screen. Just for those commenters, yeah. You know,
it's tough making that blanket statement just in general. There's spots in the Rocky Mountains just where straight up you don't need anything. Like you can just literally have food inside your tent. The bears are not, even there's in bear areas, they're not going to bother you. And so yeah, it's hard. I don't know. It's hard to make a blanket statement. That is a hot take.
Yeah, hey, that's why it's hot. It's hot.
And yeah,
yeah.
So I got in a little bit of trouble. Making this, I didn't make this hot take
say
directly,
it, say
but it's
it, say
inspired
it.
Me to make this hot take.
Okay.
So I was talking about ultralight backpacking, and I mentioned a chair, and someone was like, you're an idiot. Chairs are not ultralight. Like, if you're bringing a chair, you are not ultralight backpacking. You cannot say that you're ultralight backpacking if you're bringing a chair. And my hot take is that we're at a point now where packs have gotten so light that bringing a chair can be considered part of an ultralight kit. It's the same kind of thing with a pillow. Like pillows,
yeah.
Years ago, you would not have a pillow in an ultralight kit because you'd just be stuffing a stuff sack with clothing.
Right.
And that was just the way things were. But I think now the way things have evolved is that you can now have a kit that's whatever ultralight means to you. Like for me, ultralight's a philosophy as opposed to like a direct number.
Right.
And I think that you can be ultralight by bringing a chair.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's got to come back down to weight, right? If you're pussy, put.
it's a children's podcast,
if,
Jesse.
if you're pushing, so yeah, I think it comes back down to weight. If you're pushing, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 pounds for a base weight with a chair, an ultralight, you can still get up. I mean, again, philosophy, like weights are different. Like if you can get a good below 15, close to 10, sure, do it. Like that's your system, go for it. I think that's still ultralight.
I would say go for it, do all that. You're not ultralight. I would 100% disagree with you. 100%. I think that's ridiculous. Like, I'm not a purist. I just know if I'm going light and fast, I'm like, okay, this trip's gonna be stinking hard. We got a lot of miles. We got a lot of elevation gain. The chair's the first thing that I ditch. You're talking about like comparing to the pillow. You're adding 2 ounces versus a chair. You're adding pound minimum.
Interesting. For me, the chair is one of the last things that I ditch.
Really?
Like.
That's a hot.
Like, I like sleep system to me is no matter what, I'm bringing a comfortable sleep system. Like, that's at this point, doesn't matter. I can get ultralight with a heavier sleep system with a pillow and comfortable sleeping pad. But then after that, like, chairs next.
I bring the chair when I know that I'm going on an easier trip or with folks that are going to be slower than me, where I'm like, oh, I can manage a chair. But if I seriously, if I'm like, this is going to be a hard trip, then I'm skipping the chair. Like, I think it's an easy way to shave weight off your pack. I get the luxury of it for sure, but I think if you're talking truly going ultralight, then you're trimming luxuries. You're trimming a lot of luxury.
I want to clarify, I am not ultralight, but I do not bring a chair because I do view it as a pure luxury. It doesn't add anything to the trail or my ability to hike the trail better, other than weight. And so for me, it is pure luxury, and I almost never bring one except for winter camping.
I feel a lot better with the back sport when I'm around camp. And I think that's, for me, that's where the big thing comes into play, is how much time am I spending at camp? If I'm getting to camp, cooking dinner, and then basically going to bed, and when I'm solo, a lot of the time that's what I'm doing, and I'm not bringing a chair. But on any sort of group trip, I'm usually going to bring a chair, even if it is like a harder trip where we are going a little bit longer and faster and more ultralight, then I'll still bring a chair, because if I'm going to sit, I want to be sitting in a chair.
I would challenge your need to go ultralight if you're having a lot of camp time, then.
Yeah.
Do you really need to go ultralight if you're like, well, I'm going to be sitting around for a long time? Well, then you don't need to be ultralight. You can bring some luxuries, right? You can bring a 50-pound pack. Yeah.
Here we go, yeah. I think that brings us full.
I got one last hot take, and that is that Justin Outdoors should make a Justin Outdoors branded backpacking pillow and sell it.
Why?
Because I want it. That's why. I want a Justin Outdoors certified perfect pillow.
I will contact my contacts and see what I can do. So that brings us full circle. We talked about the pack in the beginning. We just talked about the 50-pound pack. I can unfortunately throw this on my back and hoof it up. Big pass over there. Really appreciate having you guys on.
Dude, always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Links to Backcountry 4 with Jesse and Carl with Backpacking and Blisters down in the show notes. So definitely go check those guys out. Awesome channels and podcast. Really appreciate having you on. And it's been great traveling with you.
Yeah,
guys.
Man. Justin's the best.
The best.
Thank you.
Not ultralight, but legit.
Hot take, Justin Rock.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching. We'll see you on the next one.